Alt NPR.
The following is an excerpt from Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything. For more information, visit toeradio.org.
I've been on the set of the World Trade Center movie, and I've been walking around in the rubble, and I've been thinking about New York, and actually we've been like kind of tied together in a weird way for the past couple of weeks.
I live here now, you know.
Yeah, I remember getting a phone call that you just kind of absconded from Boston, and I've been on this Oliver Stone movie where he's recreating the World Trade Center thing that occurred, so we've kind of both been in New York City.
Wait a minute, they're making a 9/11 movie.
Yeah, they actually are doing it. We have the whole set, which is built to scale and built meticulously. I have the rubble on the exact place. It's exactly the size of the World Trade Center, and it's right here in L.A. I'm there on September 12th, the day after, and I think that's when they pulled the last survivor from the wreckage. I'm one of the extras that's dressed in a costume that says FBI. Yeah, so I'm an FBI agent. But I form one of the human, one of the people, one of the men in the human chain that brings the survivors down from the rubble down to the waiting ambulances below. And yesterday was the last scene of the movie, so we took Nicolas Cage out of the rubble.
Oh, man.
He's the guy who plays the real guy that actually got rescued. And you know what? They've been trying to do everything like exactly as it was. So the real firemen from New York had been flown here to be part of the extras on the set. And also the real guy that really did get rescued is sitting around the set too, giving his opinion. And I don't know, he's just part of the production.
So are you mixing as an extra wearing this FBI costume with real FBI guys that were there on 9/11?
Yes.
Oh,
there was only
man.
A couple FBI guys thrown into the rubble. It's mainly cops, firemen, policemen, and Red Cross. There's a couple of us FBI.
What an insane way to make a movie.
Well, that's what Hollywood is. I mean, if an event in life happens, then it's going to be recreated in Hollywood. And I don't know, it's such a strange thing for me because it's such a part of history to have been there when the World Trade Center blew up. I wasn't there in New York the day that the buildings came down, but now here I am 5 years later on the recreation. And it's really, it's just as good because it has you reflect, and if anything, I mean, it's like the Disney ride. However, there's no danger attached to it, but you're there, I mean.
So you really feel that even though this is a recreation, that you're participating in the actual event?
Honestly, I do have this feeling that I'm much more connected, like I'm actually combing through the rubble. It gives me an actual visceral connection to the events that occur in the world.
You know, I've only been here a few weeks, but I feel completely the opposite. I feel that, you know, the New York that's always been in my head that I always wanted to go live in. I mean, I got this amazing apartment in the East Village, and it just feels like I got here too late. Like, there's no, you know, it's all history, it's all landmarks, it's all kind of gone, and now it's just a playground for, you know, wealthy NYU kids and foreigners. And I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm depressed because I just moved here, but it just seems that there's nothing kind of real about this. It's almost like this is a recreation. You can just feel it right away, this overbearing sense that it's
of Disneyland.
Yeah, it's already happened, and now people are just kind of reenacting it out. I mean, listening to you, you know, this experience you just had in the fake New York, I mean, it seems like you've been connecting, you know, to big emotional events and important things. And whereas myself, I mean, you know, I'm almost embarrassed to tell you now, I mean, you know, how petty and shallow everything kind of seems. I mean, there's this.
So in a way, I'm in a New York that's more real than your New York. You're living in the fake New York while you're in New York.
Listen to this. So there's this coffee shop on 9th, a few blocks away, that I've discovered that I kind of like. And a few nights ago, I'm in there, and I'm reading. I'm sitting by the door, and this guy comes in, and he has one of those little dogs on a leash, you know, those little yappy dogs that people seem to have in this city. And we have the same jacket on, the same coat. And it's this nice leather pea coat that I found at Filene's basement. And it's kind of unique looking in that the reason I bought it, the inside lining is like, you know, a really colorful bookshelf. Can you picture that?
Yes.
All right, so this guy's wearing the same jacket that I'm wearing, and he gives me a look of death, Peter. I mean, he just bears into me with this, you know, how dare you be in here wearing my jacket. And I'd been in this coffee shop for a few hours, and I was ready to go, so I gathered my things together and left. And it wasn't until...
He was upset, really, because wearing the same coat?
Oh, the look I got was just brutal. And it didn't hit me until I was outside, and that he probably thought I was like an easy pushover, and it scared me out. So it really upset me. So for a couple of days, actually, I was pretty upset. And then last night, I went back there, and he was coming out this time.
Who's this guy? Is he older or younger? Like
my age.
Contemporary of you?
My
oh,
age. Yeah. And he didn't have his little yappy dog with him this time. But he had this Asian girl with him. And again, it was the same look. It was just a look of death, just daggers right into me. So obviously he realized that I'm not a tourist, and I live in the same neighborhood, and we frequent the same places. And I could kind of tell that he was really trying to make sure that the girl he was with didn't see me, and didn't see that I had the same jacket on.
You can't just go up to the guy, settle it by saying, "Hey, look, same." Settle it once and for all.
There was three levels of this communication. There was the look of death. There was the fear that she would see me. And then there was also this kind of, you know, we may have the same jacket, but look what I have. I've got this,
right,
you know, hot...
With the girl.
Girl, yeah. So the question is what do I do so the next time I see him, that the next confrontation ends with me being the undisputed winner?
Wow, that sounds really petty. I mean, when you think about our different New Yorks, I'm sitting here thinking of, like... actual events that occurred, that part of history, our national interest, and another
guy's jacket. I know, I'm embarrassed.
It's
really
so petty.
I know, and
I mean, I feel like I'm more in New York than you are.
That might be the case.
I'm awoken from a deep sleep by the sound of a doorbell. It's a doorbell I've never heard before, and thus the effect is extra unsettling. I'm unsure of where I am, who I am, and why I am. But the pressing problem is the doorbell. Why is it going off? Who could possibly be pushing it? You see, I've just moved to the city. No one even knows where I live. And it's 7 a.m. I decide to ignore it, and after a moment, it stops. But then, I hear a doorbell go off in someone else's apartment, and then another, until finally, I hear the street door open and close. Then, the shouting and banging starts up. My mind races. Has some innovative street person taken his panhandling operation out from the subway and into my apartment building? I listen as he goes from door to door, banging away and calling out for donations. But when he gets to my door, I realize he's shouting not spare change, but rather, exterminator. I muster as much courage as I can, but still my voice squeaks, "Go away! Nothing to exterminate here." But instead of receding footsteps, I hear my doorknob turn. And then I watch in disbelief as the door swings open. The first thing I notice is his beard. It looks like it hasn't been washed in years. The first thing he notices is that I'm sleeping on the floor. Bed bugs? He calls out, motioning at the bed behind me. No, no, I say, rising to my knees. No bed bugs, no bed bugs here. I can barely focus, but I'm certain there is something moving around in his beard. He pulls a hose from the canister attached to his back and starts spraying my bed. No, stop, I plead. Go away. No bed bugs. At this point, the door across the hallway opens up and my neighbor bursts into my apartment. She is a bulky woman and she knows how to use it. Bed bugs, she screams. Have you brought bed bugs into the building? No, 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 I reply. Both of you, get out of here. My neighbor points at the blanket and pillow on the floor and lets out a shriek. You have brought bed bugs into the building. I knew you were troubled the moment I laid eyes on you. I move between the exterminator and my bed. As you can see, I point out, the bed is a bit of a mess. The sheets and the mattress pad are all twisted up together, and the idea of fixing them at 3 in the morning was just, well, it was depressing. I never had to do that sort of thing. My ex-girlfriend, she always took care of that. And to tell you the truth, I was also a bit drunk. Actually, I was trashed, so I decided to sleep on the floor. No big deal. A natural decision considering the circumstances. And now, if you don't mind, I'd like you both to leave. The exterminator turns to my neighbor for direction. She scowls at the bed, and then at me. Now you listen, young man. Ever since you moved in here, I've heard that sex moaning every night. And if you think I'm gonna stand by while you let some dirty prostitute befoul this building with bed bugs, you've got another thing coming. With this, the exterminator resumes spraying with an almost religious fervor. I pick up an empty wine bottle off the floor and brandish it over my head. For your information, I say, that moaning came from a video I downloaded from the internet. Not that it's any of your business. The exterminator lowers his nozzle and strokes his beard, or whatever's living in his beard. Please, get out now. I say this as calmly and as firmly as a man wearing nothing but a pair of rubber ducky boxers can say. My neighbor turns on her heel and motions to the exterminator, who then follows her out. I slam the door and lock it behind them. I contemplate fixing the bed, but throughout the twisted sheets, there are now tiny, shallow pools of some unknown viscous substance. But they're deep enough to reflect the loneliness, menace, and dread that make up my situation.
Why did you want to meet here?
You don't like this place?
Are you kidding? It's such a ridiculous hipster coffee shop.
Well, I like it. I wouldn't be so demeaning about it, but here's the deal. I've had now 2 altercations with this guy here that he wears the same jacket that I do.
What, that jacket?
Yeah, what's wrong with this jacket?
That hipster jacket?
It's a very nice jacket. It's got, look at this, book lining, like the bookshelves on
the inside. But it's a Penguin brand.
So?
Piece of clothing. So that's like hipster emblem central.
What do you mean?
Have you ever seen the OC?
No.
You've never seen the OC?
What's the OC?
The OC is this TV show for like rich, disaffected kids, and there's this one character, his name is Seth Cohen. He's this like token Jewish comic book reading kid, and all he wears are Penguin clothes.
Ah, so he wears my jacket.
He would, but it's too warm over there. It's the OC.
Is that like California?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm not, you know, aware of the TV cred of this jacket. I just found it in Filene's basement, and it was like, you know, $100.
Maybe that's why he's pissed.
The guy?
Yeah, you probably paid like $500 for it.
Ah, okay now. All right, well, here's the deal. He's definitely angry because, like I said, it's been two altercations now. And both times, you know, he really gave me the look of death. And the other day when I saw him, he was with this Asian girl. And my thinking was, if I could have you here with me, because you're better looking.
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking that with you here, he'll show up and he'll see that I am the better man. And then he'll leave me alone.
Okay, so you can't out-jacket him, but you can out-Asian him.
Yeah.
So you're basically trying to rent an Asian for an afternoon.
That's one way of looking at it. I wouldn't put it, you know, like that, but,
you
know.
Oh, you wouldn't?
No.
Do you know how offensive that is on both an ironic and real level? I work for a human rights organization. We fight things like this.
Well, I mean, it's just, it's nothing really that nefarious. It's just, you know, you're going to help me in something that's very important. And
well, I'm flattered that you want to involve me in something obviously so important. But if he's not here in the next 30 seconds, I've got things to do.
You've been listening to an excerpt from Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything, written and performed by Benjamin Walker, Peter Choice, and Stephanie Wang. For more information, an audio archive, and a blog, visit toeradio.org. Also, visit the Public Radio Exchange, where the Theory of Everything got its start. You can, too, at prx.org.
Alt.